Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for June 22nd. 2021, it's also my birthday. Meine Geburtstag. Almost gutes Geburt, zum Geburtstag, zu mich, which is really horrible German. Thank you guys for all the nice words and emails and all of that. I appreciate the hell out of it. It's, you know, one more trip around the sun. Always grateful for one more trip around the sun. Hopefully there's still a bunch in front of me, but we shall see. I hope so. Anyway, yeah, no, I'm not a big birthday guy, but I appreciate the. I don't like making a stink of my birthday, but I like it secretly. Like it when other people do, you know. I've never thrown myself a party. I don't really want a party, but I don't like post on Facebook like, "Hey, today's my birthday." But the people who know, and they initiate the welcome or happy birthday wishes or whatever, that I like. I don't know. It's weird. Anyway, don't forget about the Curse program. If you want to find a cool and creative and very frustration-free way of supporting the program, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. You can email me, DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com. DerekAllan Hunter. If you need that spelled out, don't write me. At gmail.com. I still get some people like, damn it, I wrote the wrong email. And they forward me what they got, either bounce back or send it. It happens. My email is exceedingly long, but yeah, somebody else had snapped up all the shorter versions by the time I got Gmail. So what are you going to do? Yeah. So anyway, thank you for all your support, all your good wishes. Let me tell you about Ancient Life Oil, CBD oil. I just took some, as a matter of fact. The Broad Spectrum CBD natural flavor, 500 milligrams. I just stuck it in my mouth before I started recording. It helps with aches and pains, and I got aches. I got pains with this walk-in thing and this speed walk-in thing. I got blisters on my feet. So you go to AncientLifeOil.com. It helps you with your aches and pains. It helps you with the stress. It helps you with anxiety. Pop a little bit under your tongue every day, and it helps you sleep easier. It really just is an amazing thing. Do some research. See what they're saying about CBD oil. Then you decide you want to get the best. 100% pure, organic CBD oil. No GMO stuff in there. You go to AncientLifeOil.com. They have a great sale going on right now. You can find out all the details at AncientLifeOil.com. Then you can throw it in your cart. Give it a shot. Enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout. Click apply. You get free fast shipping on top of a great product. It's win, 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 win all around. All right, let's get on with the winning, shall we? One of those days where there's just a ton of stuff going on. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, I've started walking, started getting exercise as part of control my blood pressure. Who knew that being in a job like this, you'd think you'd vent it all. You know, but I've got two giant blisters, one on each foot. So I've gone all in, doing at least 2 miles, 3 miles in the morning. I'm getting up early to do this. I'm like, I'm going to check this box when I do this. But now I hobble around the rest of the day like I don't know, like somebody put nails or glass, broken glass all over the floor or something. It's just terrible. Anyway, like I said, we got lots of stuff to get to. And I'm just looking at the Twitter machine. I see this. U.S. saw 10 mass shootings over the weekend. 10 mass shootings. And you go, my God, where are these things? What's going on? Where are the reports of this? This is terrible. Somebody should do something. So the U.S. this is from Axios, which is essential. It's not even a real news website. It's like an outline of a paper to be written later. Remember when you used to have to hand in outlines of the paper you were going to write? That's what Axios is. The U.S. had 10 mass shootings since Friday night, as the country continues to see a spate of mass gun violence in 2021, according to the Gun Violence Archive. Oh, they went right to the liberal source for it all, huh? Well, that's mighty nice of them. Why it matters. The U.S. has seen 293 mass shootings in 2021 so far, according to the Gun Violence Archive. Now, if you're asking yourself, I must have missed something, right? Yeah, you did. Because they have redefined what constitutes a mass shooting. Mass shooting used to be a nut job goes into the post office or some disgruntled person goes into something. And, you know, and now it's two gangs warring over crack turf. They literally, that's what they count as a mass shooting, is if two or more people were shot at. Or if two or more people were shot. It's just, boom, go on. It's gang-related turf wars in Chicago and other major Democrat-controlled cities. But just a mass shooting, they throw that out there because they want you to get the wrong impression. They want you to think, my God, we have become a war zone. Horrible, horrible situation. Horrible country. What an awful, awful country. As a matter of fact, I wasn't going to get to this early, but since we're on how horrible this country is and how violent this country is, MSNBC has a contributor I'd never heard of, but then they just hire any left-wing nut job they can get their hands on. It really is amazing. At some point, if I'm a shareholder of whatever major conglomerate owns MSNBC, I'm going to have some questions about why they're shelling out money for just insane people to come on TV and say stupid things. But then again, it's not just contributors over there. It's actual hosts. Joy Reid, Rachel Maddow is a conspiracy theorist. Chris Hayes, whose seemingly goal in life is to morph into Rachel Maddow. I don't understand that. Anyway, this contributor is named Brittany Packnett Cunningham. Three whole names for her. Brittany Packnett Cunningham. She's got an interesting theory because, you know, violence is up all across the country. Violence is up everywhere. There's really no question about that. The statistics show it. As a matter of fact, in Atlanta, homicides are up just this year versus this time last year. 58% homicides up. Shootings are up 40%, which means that they got really good aim in Atlanta, apparently. But in New York City, they've got the exact opposite. Homicides are up 13% and shootings are up 64%. So they got really bad aim in New York City. Now, in Chicago, they had so many shootings and homicides that it's tough to really illustrate how bad it is with statistics, with percentages. But the homicides are up 5%. You think, oh, Chicago's up only 5%. That's pretty good. Yeah, again, if you control the unit of measure, you can control everything. But the number of dead is, like, still really exceedingly high because Chicago, there's a lot of murders. So a 5% increase in a city where there's 1,000 murders a year versus a 50% increase in a city where there are 200 murders per year, and you begin to see why certain cities use different numbers and different ways of measuring it. But the shootings in Chicago are up 18%. That's actually pretty significant considering the number of shootings already. You go through the weekend, like 48 people were shot and 10 died from Chicago. So the shootings are up even higher, man. LA is 22% up for homicides and 51% up for shootings. Philadelphia, it's up 37% for homicides and 27% for shootings. Again, apparently the city of brotherly love is really good with aim. Well, according to MSNBC contributor Brittany Packnett Cunningham, the reason for this increase in crime is the police. Now, I know. If you just almost drove off the road, I apologize. I should have given you more warning that much stupidity was going to come out. But I'm not making it. I am just the conveyor. of the insanity. I am not the insane one myself. So let's listen to her. Try to explain, try to make the case, because defund the police was the Democrats' rallying cry, and a lot of places did, in fact, defund the police. I will point out in this clip you're about to hear, at one point, Brittany Packnett Cunningham uses a number of the 50 largest cities, to try and illustrate that the police actually were not defunded anywhere. The problem is the places, if you cast a wide enough net, you're going to capture everybody, right? Oh, in the 50 largest cities, we actually saw an increase in the funding on police. Oh, okay. That's all well and good. What about the cities where Democrats said they were going to defund the police? Like, that's kind of where it's relevant. She doesn't separate them out because other cities didn't defund the police, but some place like, you know, Portland did defund the police. New York City cut $1 billion from the police budget. Los Angeles cut the police. All these cities that I just went through, they've all cut the police budget. They cut it rather significantly. In New York, their budget was, I believe, $6 billion, and they cut it down to $5 billion. That's a pretty nice chunk of change being shaved off the top there. But if you mash New York City in with Des Moines, Iowa, and Lincoln, Nebraska, and, you know, just 50 random cities who have gone through the budgetary process and rationally said, we're going to increase our funding for police, then you can wash over the cutting of police budgets in liberal cities. It's weird how you do that. Again, it's very slick how Brittany Packnett Cunningham does this. They're not stupid people. They're evil. There's a difference. So just keep that in mind when you hear that, because that's what she's doing. The liberal-controlled cities have cut their police, and now they're trying to not cut. They're trying. Some of them are coming back, going, no. We're gonna refund the police because the shootings have gone through the roof. And that's where Brittany Packnett Cunningham says the reason for the crime spike is police. Not kidding.
I think that there are a lot of police unions and GOP operatives that would like for us to believe that this recent crime wave has everything to do with this idea of defunding the police. But guess what, Stephanie? The police haven't been defunded. You actually look at the 50 largest cities' law enforcement spending as a share of the general expenditure in each of those cities actually rose slightly from 13.6% to 13.7%. And many of the cities that have talked about removing that money, like Minneapolis, in Seattle, they've actually paused or slowed how they were thinking about moving that money. So this rising crime is not the fault of the movement. It's actually the fault of the police. And this has been our point all along. Why should we keep funding systems and institutions that keep rendering themselves ineffective? We should be talking about gun control, livable wages, fair housing, education. That's where we should be moving the money to ensure truly safe streets.
You imagine? Now, essentially what she's saying there is people are being shot and murdered because people are poor. Do you recognize how biased and bigoted that is? Just taking that one part of it. Just poor people. Poverty causes people to be violent. Therefore, stay away from poor people. They're violent. Poverty causes... There are a lot of people in this country who are neck deep in poverty, who never resort to violence. Never. Never even come close to it. In fact, the vast majority of people in this country, on this planet, who live in poverty, who experience poverty, never come close to committing violent crimes in any way, shape, or form. They're good people. It's just their income levels. Yet the left wants you to equate the two so that they can then say, well, you know, we've got to alleviate poverty if you really want to get rid of crime. No, you don't. You have to deal with the root causes of crime first and foremost. And one of the biggest root causes of crime is the disintegration of the family. Am I allowed to say that? but it is the disintegration of the family. You want to find the best anti-poverty program the world has ever conceived of? Get married before you have kids and stay married. And then your children and you will stay out of poverty. May not seem like it all the time. Some days you're sitting there going, oh my God, where did all the money go? But you will stay out of poverty. That's the way the world works. But you're not allowed to say that because what do you hear constantly? Anybody who in an award show says, you know, I want to thank my mom and my dad. They stayed together and they really helped me, blah, blah, blah. And then you have the, what do you get? You get the backlash. No, are you saying the single mother is a bad thing? No, I'm not saying a single mother is a bad thing. Why did you mention the father? Single mothers are the heroes. You mention a single mother at any award show, and when you get, oh, it's a standing ovation. Oh, the single mother, the single mother, the single mother. Yes, there are some absolutely phenomenal single mothers out there. Ben Carson's mother comes to mind. But when you're playing the odds, you're playing the averages, that is not where the smart money goes. The smart money for future, children's future, is on the intact family. But no Democrat will say that. Any Republican says that is immediately white oppressor, trying to be a blah, 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 blah. All right, well, whatever. Then if you are not going to take the simple fix, the simple treatment for what ails you, the poverty that you claim is causing all of these things, instead you want to take another tactic, then why should I care? If you are knowingly going to engage in false equivalences and lies, why should the public care? Should we set huge piles of money on fire simply because you guys have this idea in your head against all evidence to the contrary? You, the party of science? No. Just go, all right, you do you. We'll do us, and we'll see how it goes. And you can't do that. You're not allowed to do that anymore. You will be made to care. You will be made to participate. You will not be allowed to say, live and let live. I don't want to have anything to do with this. Not at all. That anymore does not exist and is not allowed to exist. Coming up, we've got some audio to prove just how insane the left is. Plus, we got some insane audio from President Fauci. Good Lord, he really loves himself. And he also forgets what he's done with himself. We also have Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. He's sitting there, Sheldon Whitehouse. What kind of name is that? Imagine, close your eyes, unless you're driving. Close your eyes and imagine what a Sheldon Whitehouse would look like. And you're probably close. This really kind of Sheldon-y Whitehouse-y guy. Turns out this liberal Democrat who, boy howdy, loves to talk about race and racism and the structural racism and blah, 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 blah. He's got a little bit of a, well, you can't say checkered past on the issue of race and inclusion because it's his present. In fact, it's how he spent his Juneteenth. This is something to behold. Sheldon Whitehouse. Anyway, we'll get to all of that and more. Looking at what we got here, where do we go next? Let's briefly talk about President Fauci, shall we? Because he's really laying it on thick, which is saying something for him. He's still doing more interviews than any human being ever. I swear to God, like the quarterback of the winning Super Bowl team gives fewer interviews in a day of the Super Bowl than Fauci does on an average day. Just unbelievable. But he was talking to the New York Times for one of their podcasts. They churn out a bunch of podcasts because, like, you know, liberals go, we need more liberalism. We need more liberalism. We must have it. And he reiterated his thoughts that attacking him is attacking science. Now, he tries to rationalize it, but he does so unsuccessfully. Let's just listen to the guy squirm around a little bit.
The people who are giving the ad hominems are saying, Fauci misled us. First he said no mask, then he said mask. Well, let me give you a flash. That's the way science works. You work with the data you have at the time. It is essential as a scientist that you evolve your opinion and your recommendations based on the data as it evolves. That is the nature of science. It is a self-correcting process. And that's the reason why I say people who then criticize me about that are actually criticizing science. It was not a change because I felt like flip-flopping. It was a change because the evidence changed. The data changed.
The data changed. I didn't have anything to do with it. Hey, what are you going to do to me? Eh? Little 5'4" Tony Fauci isn't going to take no guff from nobody about him changing his mind. He was following the science. Eh? It's one of those things where you're sitting there and you like you talk to a guy on the phone and you think, well, this guy sounds like he could really kick some butt. And then you meet him in person and you're like, this guy seems like he might die eating a meatball. Like, I'm not really sure what's going on. There's a massive disconnect between the way we stereotype an accent like this guy has and, you know, his dwarfish frame. But what's interesting is Grabian Media, which compiles a lot of, you know, it watches cable news so you don't have to. It finds all the good cuts and everything. They have compiled a list, a rather extensive list of studies that show that masks, particularly, and you know, you can sit there and you say masks, masks, masks. Not all masks are created equal. And we just admit that. You can buy them like, ooh, $1. They're impulse buys right at the drugstore right there on the counter. You buy those for $1 and it falls off your nose. It falls off your... Those, we all agree that nobody's ever thought those things did anything other than were just for show. Let's just be honest. That's all they were. Look at me, I'm virtue signaling. Or they were the masks where you're just like, all right, they're going to force me to wear a mask. I'm going to put on, this counts as a mask. This is a face drape. It doesn't do anything, but I'm going to put it on there. I could eat through the gaping holes in the side of this thing, but I don't care. And then there are the other people who use the N95 masks that are tight-fitting, that change them regularly when the neck elastic stretches out so that there's a pretty good general tight fit on there. Those masks likely do something, all right? The N95, man, I'm not going to bore you with what it is, but having worked in construction gigs and everything, when you're dealing with particulate matter that is not particularly good that you want breathing in, you wear an N95 mask and you don't drop dead and you don't go into coughing fits or anything like that. So it does filter out a lot of things. Even the medical professionals were like, yeah, no, it's N95 masks are the ones you want. And an old tube sock laying over your nose is not going to do anything. Yet they don't really, you know, notice that Fauci didn't differentiate between those two until recently, until masks started going away. Until masks started going away, then Fauci talked about, well, you know, the stuffs you buy in the grocery store, they're not going to be all that good. And he even wrote that in an email back in February of last year. Yet he never came out and said it publicly. And that's part of the problem we have with the Reverend Dr. Mr. President Tony Fauci, our Lord and Savior, is that he says all of these things like, I never said that masks were a panacea, and I don't know about this. And if you attack me and what I said, I'm just following the science. The problem is, what science? Like I said, Grabian Media has a compilation here. 27 studies and articles undercutting utility of masks for stopping COVID. 27 of them so far. Academic studies, peer-reviewed studies, New England Journal of Medicine, down to news stories. You name it, it's up there. You can find all of these things. All the links are embedded there. So you want to tell me again that you were following the science, Tony, when you told us at the beginning of the pandemic, don't wear masks. Then you told us in the middle of the pandemic, I only told you don't wear masks because I didn't want there to be a shortage of masks for the frontline workers. Okay. Was that following? Is there a part of the science that says, you go ahead and lie You know, if it suits your needs, if it's convenient at any given moment, if it helps you out, you know, go ahead and lie. Meh, it's a scientific method. I don't think so. Now, I'm no scientist, although I do have a degree in political science. So maybe I, like Dr. Jill Biden, I should be referred to as a scientist. But this holier than thou, you don't question me, you question science. You lied. You lied, Fauci. Where are, and he says, as the studies evolved, where are the studies that show, even retroactively, that masks work? We're not allowed to ask that question. I'm going to ask it anyway. But we're not allowed to ask that question because there is no such study where masks work. If you look at the most heavily locked down states in the country, they had higher COVID transmission rates and larger outbreaks than states that never locked down, like the state of Florida, like the state of South Dakota. How do you explain that? I'm not saying that masks cause transmission or anything like that, but there's a damn good field of inquiry sitting there out there for anybody in the realm of science who really wants to notice, you know, what happened. The death rate in Florida is significantly lower than the death rate in New York. New York locked down for very long periods of time and very thoroughly. Florida, not so much. South Dakota did not mandate mask use, did not lock down, did not shut everything down. Per capita basis, much better than New York. Why is that? Might it be that trusting the population is the way to go? Saying, hey, there's a disease out there. It's a virus. It's airborne. You don't really want to be exposed to it. The best thing you can do is wash your hands and stop licking doorknobs. Don't make out with strangers. Now is probably not the time to reconstitute your spin the bottle club. And people will act accordingly. Whereas if you tell people there is this prophylactic that works, that mask, you just put anything over your face. Remember at the beginning of this when they had Dr. Birx out there talking about how you can just make your own. You can take an old bandana or you can take some paper towel. And they knew that that wasn't going to work. They knew that that didn't do anything. Of all the things that didn't do anything, they knew that. But they're out there going, oh, and you fold it like this and you fold it like that. And suddenly it becomes the most expensive and damaging arts and crafts show ever. And they say, here you go. Now there's your mask. Now go shopping. Well, maybe in states that locked down heavily and mandated masks thoroughly, had a situation where those people with the prophylactic on their face felt wildly secure and didn't take other precautions. Well, if it enters through my nose and mouth hole, and I've got my nose and mouth hole covered by this strip of Bounty, then I don't see what the problem is. I don't have to worry about anything. You can be more laxed about this sort of thing. Maybe that had something to do. Maybe you can be in more close quarters with people without thinking anything of it. Maybe that's why the states that locked down did so terribly relative to the states that did not. It'd be something worth looking into, but President Fauci doesn't even want to admit that's a possibility. Look, I follow the science everywhere. Where's your science? Where's your science for the lockdowns? Where's your science for the masks? Where's your science for what you said? You should, if you live and breathe science, Tony, you should be able to produce that, I would think. I would think. That's just me. I don't know. Anyway, it just drives me nuts. Oh, no. If you criticize, no, we're criticizing you because you were all over the damn map, Fauci. That's why. You said yes. You said no. You said maybe. You said maybe not. You couldn't have come up with a new answer if you tried. You ran through the gamut of all of them. Blah, 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 blah. Well,
That's not science. Science does evolve as new evidence comes along, but science doesn't declare something to be without evidence simply because your spidey sense is tingling. Where was the science in the beginning? Where was the science? Where is the science now? That'd be an interesting question. He'd never come on this show, but he'll go on, you know, another New York Times podcast, and I can't wait to, I'm sure he'll win a Nobel Prize and medicine or something. Give me a damn break. If you really wanted to capture liberalism in a story that's not about politics but has political ramifications, this story from the New York Post would do it. The headline, it's under the living section, living instead of the dead. The headline, heart attack survivor who had 12 energy drinks a day aims to ban sales to kids. And it's everything you'd expect it to be. A man who once downed a dozen energy drinks per day is warning parents to be sure their children avoid the dangerous beverages. Lee Kamen, 55, has embarked on a campaign for kids' health after discovering his daughter, Summer, 10, had managed to purchase a Monster energy drink at a convenience store. Well, you know, I remember growing up as a kid where there's the kid smoking pot or caught with pot, and the father's like, where did you get the, how did you learn it, where did you come from? And he goes, I learned it from watching you, okay? Well, if you're chugging down a dozen energy drinks, first of all, what do you need with all that energy? Secondly, get a nap in or sleep or whatever. And thirdly, just because you were dumb enough to take a dozen bottles of sugary caffeine and that's about it, doesn't mean everybody else is. Why don't you just leave everybody else the hell alone? I keep looking at the... this is a recurring theme now, that some Catholic bishops here in the country, as they should, are placing Catholic... Imagine this. They're placing Catholic dogma on issues like abortion above, I don't know what the Democrats want them to put above. It's bizarre to me. Joe Biden is a devout Catholic. You turn on any news channel in the world and you just hear, wow, he's, it was either become president or pope for Joe Biden. He's just that Catholic. He had a choice and he chose president, and he's just going to have to deal with that choice. The problem is, the teachings of the Catholic Church are pretty unambiguously not in line with the teachings and preachings of the Democratic Party. Not just putting it mildly, putting it, throwing it out there. It's really not. You can pick your issue, it doesn't matter. But the one that really sticks out is abortion, where the Catholic Church says that abortion is bad. Not, you know, hey, you probably shouldn't do that, but as long as you do a couple Hail Marys afterwards, we're all good. No, it's that abortion is bad and should not happen. Not a lot of wiggle room in that. Whereas Democrat Party dogma is, may I have another abortion, please? Please, can I have more abortions? Can I pay for your abortion? I couldn't help but notice, you know, the way that some troops pay for, or some Americans choose pay for the meals of troops if they're out eating. There are Democrats who want to stand outside of Planned Parenthood and with a government credit card going, can I pay for your abortion? Is it all right if I pay for your abortion? I'm not here for an abortion. I'm not even going in there. I'm just walking past. Well, you sure you don't want to just duck in real quick? Have a quick abortion, even if you're not pregnant. I mean, we can go through the motions. Just can we please do that? That's the Democratic Party. It doesn't really jibe all that well with Catholicism. Now, I'm Catholic, but I'm certainly not the Pope in any way, shape, or form. Yet even I know that. Still, Democrats insist that you can be both Catholic and pro-choice. You can be. You can live that way. You can claim that. You're the one who's going to have to explain it to God at some point. So I'm not going to tell you you can't do that. But what's weird is that so many in the Democratic Party are telling the church they can't do that. Telling the church they have to do this. they have to change. That it is not Joe Biden who has misunderstood Catholic teachings or has not held in line with Catholic dogma or anything like that. It is that the church is wrong and needs to catch up with Joe Biden. Again, he ran for president, not Pope. He made that choice and he's got to live with it. Yet because he is in disagreement, or he's in disagreement with the church. The church isn't in disagreement with him. The church is the church. They are now going after the Catholic Church in weird ways. Weird ways. Larry Sabato, who is the president or the whoever, I forget what his stupid title. Let me see what his stupid title is. He's the director of the University of Virginia Center for Politics. He tweeted out, "The Catholic Church benefited enormously from the JFK presidency. Prejudice against Catholics declined and millions were exposed to church rituals. Church leaders welcomed the JFK effect. Now at last, there's a second Catholic POTUS. And what do some in the hierarchy do? Ruin it." They ruin it. How do they ruin it? Joe Biden is the one who disagrees with the Catholic Church's teachings. The Catholic Church didn't say up until January 20th, 2021, have all the abortions you want, knock yourself out. And now here comes Joe Biden like, oh, okay, just for fun, no abortions, let's change it. Now, the Catholic Church has been pretty unambiguous. You can be and claim you're as Catholic as you want to be, but you don't get to say that your Catholicism is right and therefore the church must change. You're allowed to leave the church. And if, because of something so important, this isn't a you didn't remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy, you went out to a baseball game on Sunday, so that's it, pal, you're out of the church. This isn't that. This is a pretty major tenet, a life and death issue about innocent children. So it's kind of a big deal. So if you don't agree with that, the Catholic Church has every right to say you cannot take communion. We're not going to give you communion. You are actively teaching against the church. Why should we, or actively working against the church's teachings? Act, not just you disagree, you're actively working against it. It's one thing to say, well, I don't really care about abortion. I don't know. It's not for me to get involved. I'm not interested. That's one thing. But it's another thing to say you must have abortion must be legal. Abortion must be on demand. And taxpayers have to pony up for it. That's another thing entirely to go, I want to codify that in law. I want to make sure that's in law. I want to make sure nobody can escape it. That's different. And so that's what Joe Biden is. So if the church is saying, look, we're not going to give you communion, that's fine. You know, you don't have to. If you run afoul of the church, it's not excommunication. It's putting you on notice. It's saying, okay, watch yourself, pal. You can disagree with us all you want. We're right. You don't get to say what the church does. You don't get to decide what the church is going to adhere to. So get over yourself. But Biden and the left, well, not Biden so much because he's seemingly unaware of it. He was asked about this the other day and he kind of came off senile. But the other leftists are like beside themselves that the Catholic Church would dare uphold Catholic doctrine. How dare they? It's how bizarre things have gotten. And that's how much of a religion the liberalism is these days. It's a full-blown religion. No. You're Catholic Church. You don't understand what God wants. God wants abortion on demand. God would easily be grand marshal of a pride parade or something. I don't think so. I don't think God would smite it. I don't think God would rain down sulfur on it. But I'm pretty sure God would go, yeah, let's not. I'm not going to go. Not for me. That's just my interpretation of it. I could be wrong. Again, we'll all find out one day. But to sit there and watch Joe Biden and the left squirm to try and pretend that that what is isn't and what isn't is, it's the easiest way to put it, is bizarre to me. Do you guys remember the McCloskeys? Oh, you probably do, but you might need a little bit of a refresher. They were the ones who in St. Louis lived in a really, really nice house. Who, when the BLM Antifa terrorists, I mean, we're throwing that word around pretty liberally to people who took some selfies in the Capitol Rotunda. I think we can use it for the people who have a body count of like 48 and $1 billion worth of damage. The BLM Antifa terrorists were marching through their neighborhood down a private street in St. Louis. They were the couple that was out there with their guns in front of the house saying, keep moving, move along, move along. And you know what? The BLM Antifa mob of mutants moved along, moved along, moved along. Well, as they were charged, of course, because they were conservatives. And that's not welcome in St. Louis. It's not wanted in St. Louis. It's not allowed in St. Louis, I don't think. So as part of their plea deal, they gave up their weapons, right? They pleaded guilty to misdemeanor charges. And they had to, they gave up their weapons as part of the deal. So the weapons that they were holding, there you go. But the beauty of this guy being a lawyer, apparently he's running for Senate too. I'm not really sure about that. But the beauty of this guy being a lawyer is lawyers recognize this kind of stuff. It was worded in such a way that he had to give up the weapons. They agreed to give up the weapons that they used that day. Then the McCloskeys marched down to their local gun store and bought new weapons. The same things. He tweeted out a picture of his new AR. I love it. I love it. All right, yeah, okay, you can have this. You can have this gun. If that's part of the deal, fine, have this gun. I'm rich. I'm just going to go buy another gun. See, this sort of plea deal actually works when you are a liberal going after some poor liberal. It works. Doesn't really work when you've got a smart conservative who has money. Now, this is going to be a bit of a journey here because it involves Don Lemon. It involves race. It involves the Washington Post. It involves all the things that the left just can't quit, can't get over, simply are incapable of getting over or are unwilling to get over. I don't know which, but Don Lemon is the launching off point. And it's quite a point to behold because Don Lemon tries to portray himself occasionally as, you know, I'm sane, I'm rational, I am this, I am that, I am. No, you're not, Don. He sat down. It doesn't matter how big of a failure somebody is at CNN or MSNBC, how bad their ratings are, how bad things get. It doesn't matter. They will get a glowing puff piece about them. They will get profiles. See, when a liberal is in trouble, ratings-wise, the liberal media circles around them. When a conservative is in trouble, ratings-wise, the conservative media goes, who's going to replace them? And then they all try to position themselves to be the one to replace them. It's terrible. But he sat down with, Don Lemon sat down with the magazine, the Washington Post magazine. The headline of their story, CNN's Don Lemon, quote, we're living in two different realities as black and white people. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Which one do you whine in every day? Don Lemon, 55, is the host of Don Lemon Tonight on CNN and the author of the best-selling book, This Is the Fire, What I Say to My Friends About Racism. He lives in Sag Harbor, New York. And it's an interview. It's a straight-up interview. Can I ask you about your nightly handoffs with Chris Cuomo? It's a bit of a love fest that seems organic and authentic. Yeah, that's a hard-hitting journal. There's a Pulitzer in it for this person. It's a bit of a love fest that seems organic and authentic, but also intentional. By intentional, I don't mean inauthentic, but it feels like at some point you both said, We need people to see us saying, I love you. Am I reading too much into that? Yes and no, Don says.
I think we kind of realized that after we started doing it, it wasn't intentional in the beginning. And it was just doing a handoff. When Chris came on to prime time, the boss said, I'd like there to be some interaction between shows. So now they sit there for 5 minutes, go, oh, God, I love you. You complete me, Chris Cuomo. You complete me, Don Lemon. Whenever your names get mentioned in circles I travel in, again, it tells you where the Washington Post reporter lives, where they come from. Whenever your name gets to Don Lemon, when was the last time outside of this program and maybe talk radio, you're having a conversation with somebody in your circle of friends where Don Lemon comes up? Probably not very often. Whenever your name gets mentioned in the circles I travel in, it's respectful and complimentary, but it also comes with the caveat that people think you have transformed. However, people define that. Is that fair? Don Lemon then goes on to talk about how we live in different realities. We live in two different worlds. Of course, the guy who wrote a book about race might shockingly have a view that that we're living in different realities. If that's the title of your book, if I wrote a book that, you know, hamburgers made with vegetables are the best food for you to ever have and for the world to ever consume, then I think I might have that thesis in my book. I might focus on that in my book. But for him to say, well, no, organically, you want to impress me, Don Lemon, have a finding that is contrary to your thought, to your initial thought. And he said, we've suggested that Trump, when Trump was president, you've suggested that Trump was the president we deserved and probably a necessary and revealing wake-up call. Do you still think that? Again, hard-hitting journalism here. Don Lemon responds, considering people's apathy to get involved in the political process, to pay attention to the political process, to go to the polls, their willingness to give so much attention to celebrity, I think that what I meant by the president we deserve, I think that's what I meant by the president we deserve. But there's also this false reality that we're living in a post-racial world after the election of Barack Obama. That was BS. It was a wake-up call to white people who thought we were living in a non-racist world. We're living in two different realities as black and white people. We knew as black people that what was lurking beneath the surface. I still believe that Trump was the necessary wake-up call for America to realize just how racist it is. Don Lemon paid millions of dollars to speak to thousands of people for an hour or 2 hours or whatever it is. No discernible skills whatsoever. No standards whatsoever. No matter how much he gets wrong, he is right there. They just keep on trucking. A lot of that is because of his little showmate there, Chris Cuomo, did such a horrible job of maintaining even the pretend aspect of journalistic ethics when dealing with his brother's scandals that Don Lemon can't do anything. Don Lemon can't do anything to get fired. He could literally just show up setting the building on fire at CNN in New York and then go, yeah, well, okay. It's a different take on the news. I probably wouldn't have gone that route, but who are we to judge? Well done, Don. Well done. Thinking outside the box. That sort of insanity. So why on God's green earth would we believe or care what Don Lemon, we're living in two different realities. Now, I think Don Lemon is living in a different reality from 99% of the human population, specifically of this country, definitely a higher percentage of the entire world, where you have time to worry and whine about what kind of microaggressions a former colleague might have used against you a decade ago and how that person ended up in a position of authority now and then try to ruin them.
as liberals try to do all the time, compared to people who are worried where their next meal might come from or whether or not they're going to be able to make their mortgage or rent payments. Don is disconnected from that. You want to talk about two different realities, you talk about the real different realities on this planet, in this country, and that is the people with 7-8 figures in their bank account and who call people to handle their, quote, portfolio. And the other people who are hoping to hit a nice scratcher so that maybe they can have a steak this weekend. Those are the different realities, Don. Your skin color doesn't play into that. You're just playing off your skin color because you're pathetic. So Don Lemon is a horrible, raging fraud and hypocrite. We all know that. He goes on to talk about how the George Floyd video is, the George Floyd video, did you sense that it was something different, that it might be the spark of something? Yes, but people forget that the video of Ahmaud Arbery was just as disturbing, just not as long. People who are not there, blah, 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 blah. You can find people who died every way that the left gets upset about. Every flavor of human being who's died that way. Not good. None of them are good. But let's be honest. The lie that this is open season on young black men and the police are racist in this country is systemically racist. Donald Trump was what we needed. This is horrible. And it's all the fault of white people. Well, the door is right. Actually, there is no door. You're free to go to any airport you want and get the hell out of here. If you hate it, if it's so bad, Don, you can take your millions with you. You won't be missed. But maybe you just want to explain to me how it is in such a racist country, fundamentally so to its very core, a guy like you with no discernible skills, talents, abilities, or anything could make millions of dollars. How does that work, Don? How did that happen? How did that come about? You don't have a good answer. You can't have a good answer. None of these leftists have a good answer. They just know that it can't happen again. Nobody else could do it. They're perhaps the only people who could have done it. Then you end up in a situation where there's this video. You think, well, it's Don Lemon. What do you expect? The guy's not very bright, putting it politely. So you're not dealing with somebody here who's honest, who's capable of honesty, who understands anything that's going on in this country in any real way, shape, or form. He is so insulated from such things. Well, we go to the Washington Post. The Washington Post has a video up on their website right now. It's brand new, just today. The headline, it's with the Lily. The Lily apparently is a website that the Post owns. It's allegedly the first women-owned news outlet or something. Who cares? Some old-timey newspaper. They just took the name and said, yay, we are now, we're bringing back the Lily. And so they have the Lily. And so the Lily together with The Washington Post, which means Jeff Bezos is paying for all of this, which means you can't say market forces are going to cause this sort of stupidity to stop when you've got the world's richest man willing to set money on fire over your vanity projects. There is no stopping it. There is no money because he's worth $150 billion. If you set fire to $1 million a day of Jeff Bezos's money, you will never, ever, he will never even notice it. He will never notice it. He won't. He's got $150 billion. $365 million is only one-third of $1 billion. One-third of 1% of his wealth. And then, you know, he will have earned that back. So this garbage vanity project with the Lily in these videos is not going to stop because why would it? What does it matter? But their video today is, what is white racial identity and why is it important? Well, I can tell you, who cares is the answer to the first part, and it's not is the answer to the second part. But to leftists, everything is about race. Their little description, it's two sentences. When George Floyd died, people across the United States started to look more critically at how white supremacy affects us all. I'm not. I don't care. I don't believe this crap. In this episode, we talk to mental health experts and scholars about why understanding your whiteness and the ways that white supremacy benefit you is an important part of becoming self-aware. See, they're now preaching to everybody, because of your race, because of your skin color, you have to come to terms with what your skin color has done to this planet. Now, if you're sitting there, and you're probably welling up with obscenities, and I wouldn't blame you, I am as well, but this is the mentality of the left, that you are guilty because of your skin color, and because somebody with that skin color did something that they didn't like. David Duke is producer of this video. You might as well be. Now, everybody you're going to hear, the host woman is, I can't even remember her name. I never heard of her before. She's an attractive black woman. And the first voice you'll hear is a black man who is a professor of something or other. Everybody else is a white lady who, I assume for Christmas, would want some kind of potato peeler or cheese grater so that they might remove their skin. They really seem riddled with guilt about things they had nothing to do with, done by people they didn't know, done to people they didn't know, period. I don't understand this, but we have a couple of these clips. This is what now this is funny because the left is telling you all the while, and all this last week, they were going, what? Critical race theory doesn't exist. What do you mean critical race? Don't talk about critical race theory. You're banning critical race theory. Ooh, but critical race theory doesn't exist. No, critical race theory isn't being taught in schools. It's not, here's what critical race theory is. It is the tactic, the mentality that is imbued into the teachers, into the faculty, that is then infesting the way they're teaching everything. So nobody's sitting down, here's today's lesson on critical race theory. They are using critical race theory as the lens through which everything else flows. Everything else is seen, as evidenced by this ridiculous video by the Washington Post. So remember that as they say, well, nobody's teaching critical race theory. They're trying to ban critical race theory. No, they are basically telling people that they just do their damn jobs. If you're a math teacher, teach math. If you're an English teacher, teach English. How about that? How about we turn out students who can do what they're supposed to do? Anyway, listen to this first cut. It's not a podcast. It's a web video from the Washington Post entitled, What is White Racial Identity and Why Is It Important?
George Floyd's death became a deeply personal and racial tragedy for many Americans. For the first time, white people were becoming aware of their whiteness and the systemic ways that white supremacy affects all of us.
White people in particular get aroused, get upset, say, this is unjust, this isn't right, this shouldn't happen. There's like an awakening that happens. And so part of their racial identity development is seeing that awakening. What they do with it is really the next piece of it.
In this episode, we're tackling white racial identity and why understanding your whiteness is integral to becoming self-aware as a white person. I'm Nicole Ellis, and this is The New Normal.
Yeah, this is The New Normal. You gotta learn to understand your whiteness. Are you ready to understand your whiteness, ladies and gentlemen? Even if you're not white, if you're conservative, you might as well be white. They don't count you as anything else. So they're ready to explore their new whiteness. This is what you can do if you're the richest man on the face of the earth and you just don't care. This is what you do. Oh, well, it's Prime Day. Whatever this garbage drivel cost Jeff Bezos, he's more than made up for it in the last 20 minutes. So who cares? So here are the so-called experts talking about, and they're all white except for the one male voice you'll hear in there. They're all white. The one male voice is a black guy. Talking about how we've basically, white people suck and they need to come to terms. They need to get together with other white people and talk about how they suck. You think I'm making this up? I'm not.
A living embodied anti-racist culture does not exist among white people. white people got to start getting together specifically around race.
White accountability groups are really helpful in terms of having a place to process, having a group of people whose responsibility it is to call me on things or to challenge me.
We're unpacking wrong things that we've been taught in history class. I realized that I needed to go back and unpack and reorganize everything that I had learned because it was completely through a white lens. Most of us in doing this work have experienced this, where there's a period of deep shame for being white and for acknowledging the harm that our ancestors have caused. And that's a very legitimate piece of this work. And we can't ask people of color to hold our hands through the shame piece. That needs to happen with other white people.
Yeah, that woman right there is a professional therapist, allegedly. And she's sitting there going, you know, you feel all the shame. Boy, howdy, you get all those white people together and you realize, I realize that we are collectively guilty for everything white people did. Really? Really? I don't feel guilty about anything anybody else did. Not a single other human being. I don't feel guilty or responsible for anything they did. Me? Yeah, I got it all. Anybody else? Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. But if you're sitting there and you're going, okay, you want me, you want us, you want everybody to feel this collectiveness, this you are responsible for everything bad that happened with somebody with your skin color, then we got to take that across the board. First of all, we got to take it to the good, too, all right? We get credit for the iPhone. We get credit for most medicine, pretty much, you know, technology, whatever you got. We'll take credit. The Japanese, they get credit for making it cheaper and better in a lot of cases, but we invented it, so we'll take that, see how that works out. Suddenly, this game doesn't seem that fun anymore, does it? Okay, now if you want to say that white people have collective guilt because white people were racist back in the day, then who ran the slave trade in Africa? Quick quiz. Who ran the slave trade in Africa? Who originated the slave trade in Africa? Who brought slavery to the continent of Africa? It wasn't evil whitey. Slavery was already there. Slavery existed everywhere. So it was commerce between evil whitey and the black slavers in Africa that brought the exportation of slaves to the New World. So I guess there's enough guilt to go around there. So then maybe we should all collectively walk around with our heads drooping down on the ground like some teenager who was just denied use of the car or something, just sulking, walking around with an aw shucks kind of thing shrugged to the shoulders, because we all have it coming. There, in fact, isn't a flavor of human being that at some point in our existence, in their existence, has not suffered some injustice somewhere. Should we forever be hanging our heads in shame or in blame for that? If it's only the big injustices, well, then I guess the Jews win, because World War II kind of wasn't all that long ago, certainly relative to slavery. So do we then defer to all Jews? I bet you the leftists would have a huge problem with that because they hate Jews. So that's kind of a problem, too. No, it is only one way in which the victim narrative is allowed to flow. It is black and brown people victims, white people perpetrators. Forget the fact that if you count brown in any, you know, like, as far as Indian Americans go, they're doing better than evil whitey. How, if this country is so fundamentally racist, why is it that people from India, immigrants from India, new arrivals from India, do better in this country than the people here who set up the system designed to oppress minorities? How is that possible? Yeah, don't think about it too hard, because as soon as you think about anything the left spews too hard, the entire house of cards collapses in and on itself. The video from the Washington Post continues.
When you do that for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, right, you end up with actually a community that is aligned with each other.
In theory, that sounds like a good idea, but I guess I'm curious to hear, like, what are some of the pitfalls or risks that you run if that's the only step you take?
The biggest answer is white people don't really understand racism. And so if I'm relying on other white people to teach me about racism, that can only go so far. I only best understand racism by talking to people who are directly impacted by racism from different perspectives.
Yep. You imagine having this much time on your hands? I bet you don't. I bet you can't. You couldn't imagine having this much time. This is a lot of time on your hands to come up with this garbage. To sit there and go, you know what, I've got a great idea. This is the way to do it. I couldn't possibly learn anything from anything except for talking to black and brown people. So this is how you spend your weekends? This is how you spend your downtime? Just hunting down black or brown people? Are you actually friends with black and brown people? Or are you just doing some sort of archaeological expedition to find out what is going on with them, like you're summering in some dig somewhere in Egypt? They have no answer. It gets worse. It gets dumber, I should say. I can't say worse. It gets dumber.
So in addition to having white accountability groups and white accountability buddies, it's also really important to have sustained and meaningful relationships with people of color.
I don't have the ability to like inherently name things as upholding white supremacy or as being racist. My whiteness is going to show up at different points in my life and at different points in different relationships.
But is it fair or healthy to be seeking out relationships with people just to have a diverse network? Because I feel like for people of color, you're kind of constantly trying to gauge whether or not it's worth it to be vulnerable or share how someone hurt you when your white colleagues or co-workers or friends mess up.
I just, this explains so much of the left. Go on. You're going to need to build a network of minority people so that you can just badger them nonstop about what's racism, what isn't racism, how can I be less racist today, how can I maybe want to clean up their garden while you're at it, and just ask them, how can I be less racist? And then the black female host is like, well, then what do you, like, instead of just saying, God, get away from me, stop being annoying and whining, she says, well, then what do you say, like, are you just being friends with them so that you can pick their brains? The diversity hire? Are they hired for? Are you friends with this person because of their skin color? Is that any different than not being friends with somebody because of their skin color? It's not really. It's not judging that person. Probably don't even bother. Actually, I think it's more nefarious, certainly more dishonest, to become friends with somebody because of their skin color than it is to not become friends, to deliberately avoid becoming friends with somebody because of their skin color. At least you're saying, I don't want it. I'm a jerk. I don't want to be friends with you, so I'm not going to be friends with you. We're not going to enjoy each other's company. I don't want to be around you. And you wouldn't want to be around somebody who doesn't want to be around you, even if you only found out later. Some of it would creep through, like, God, Bill's a real jerk. I don't get what's going on there. He really doesn't seem to. And then you find out years later he's only friends with you because of some weird sociological experiment. No. Get rid of them. Go away. But to lefties, you gotta find some person of color so that maybe you could present them with some sort of bullwhip so that they could wrap you across the fingers or wherever you want to get hit, where they can tell you just how wrong you are for existing the way you did in a way that was completely innocuous to every human being on the planet, but now is considered a crime against humanity that can never really truly be righted. And for which we must forever pay eternal penance for. There's more of this crap to come. We got one more clip here from the Washington Post race video. The whole thing's like 5 minutes long. It's not that long in the grand scheme of things. If you want to go and track it down and find it, it's in my Twitter feed somewhere, I think. But it is, God, I'm trying to think of the words to set this up properly, because this woman, well, these women, these therapists, these are professional therapists, says basically we got to find black and brown people to be friends with so that we can understand racism. And then you're sitting there going, okay, well, how would you like, I only became friends with you. Somebody becomes friends with me because they want to know what it's like to have a tall friend. Okay. And that's it. That's the basis for our friendship. Do you think I'm a jerk? I don't know. I never really gave it much thought. I just wanted somebody to be able to get the plates off the top shelf. I don't see what the problem is here. We're both serving a purpose. I'm giving you a short friend. And, well, no, as somebody's tall, pretty much everybody's a short friend. But anyway, this piece needs no setup. It needs explanation. So I'll give you the explanation after you hear it.
There's a different cost for my friends of color to be in relationship with me. So I think one of the things that's really important is ongoing being a friend on an ongoing basis for lots of different things, not just like thinking about racism as a part of our friendship when there's something horrible that happens. Those relationships are number one for me to be there for them as them for me. It's a relationship, and so it should be reciprocal, but also so that I have a broader understanding of the world.
Everything I thought about how I existed in my white body in the world was very wrong, and I needed this new lens to see the world through. So I think that's been a big piece of my own work.
We're going to continue to cover topics like this in the coming weeks, so stay tuned. For more stories like this one, follow The Lily on Instagram.
So that's how they wrap it up, with like the sad piano music and two middle-aged white women slowly flagellating themselves. I've been horrible before. I've been awful before. Please forgive me. Please forgive me. And the first lady, and these are both therapists, by the way. This is why when somebody tells you they're in therapy, you probably want to run away from them. Oh, you're in therapy. That's great. I'm going to go to the bathroom right now. I'm going to take my coat, my car keys, and my phone. Don't worry. I just, you know, I'll be goodbye and then just run out of there. The first lady, there's a cost to her friends of color for their friendship with her. What? What is she assuming that's going on? And there's a cost to her for her friendship with the woman of color. So what kind of a world? These are all leftists, by the way, if that needed to be explained. What is the cost? Is the white lady projecting, which happens quite often? White ladies, white liberal ladies love projecting that, you know, her white friends are going, oh, what are you doing with the black friend over there, Ethel? I don't really appreciate that. Boy, you got a black friend. That's not acceptable around these parts, Ethel. So she just assumes, Ethel just assumes that her black friend is going through the same thing. Going, what are you doing friends with that Ethel? I couldn't help but notice that her skin tone is different from ours. You can't be friends with her. Don't you understand? There's a price to be paid. Listen to this. Societal price to be paid. What planet do these people live on? When Don Lemon was talking about we live in different realities, maybe this is what Don Lemon was talking about, where one side, the liberal side, is completely, totally, 100% unequivocal, nonstop, round-the-clock obsessed with race, no matter what. And the other part of the country is normal human beings who have better things to do with their time. And the sad thing is, the normal human beings with better things to do with their time vastly outnumbers the lunatic, fringe, rabid activist leftist who sees advantage in division and will do anything to maintain and obtain power. Vastly outnumbers. In every aspect of life except for one, Washington, D.C., meaning political power and the media. Those two fields. That's it. Everywhere else on the streets, people don't give a damn. Nobody obsesses about this stuff. Nobody's concerned with this stuff. Yet in media and in government, which are sadly more often than not the same things these days, those two things form the double helix of the virus that is going to destroy society if we don't find a vaccine or something to get that out of government. I don't care if you have an academia, you can have Berkeley lunatics yelling and screaming whatever they want. It's when they get power that they become problematic. And there is this massive disconnect. What do you hear about constantly? Race, 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 race. What do you hear about race? Well, voter ID is racist. You hear that all the time. Voter ID is racist. It's meant to disenfranchise black and brown people. And you ask, well, why the hell can't black and brown people get a photo ID? Who thinks that? Who thinks they can't? Shut up, racist. That's their response to everything. Well, a new Monmouth poll, Monmouth University, it's a long, painful poll. They're desperately trying to find ways to make Republicans look bad in it. They're talking about QAnon. They're talking about the election being stolen and voter integrity and voting audits and everything. There's a question after question after question designed to try and give some numbers that they can go, aha, here, MSNBC, report on these Republicans who think X, Y, or Z. But in this survey, there's a little bit of a contrary bit of data, shall we say, to what the liberal media would focus on normally. And so you won't hear about this part. Now, they'll find some part of this survey, you know, blah, 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 blah. 70% of people say that Joe Biden is illegitimate, whatever. The real story there is 30% of people are stupid. But anyway, question 31 in this long roll call of questions that Monmouth University asked is, in general, do you support or oppose requiring voters to show a photo ID in order to vote? That's a pretty straightforward question. It is not complicated. You can't really say, well, it depends on the framing, or, oh boy, they really weighted it this way and that way and the other way to try and... No, it's pretty straight. In general, do you support or oppose requiring voters to show a photo ID in order to vote? Now, men, 82% support that idea. 16% oppose. 1% say it depends, and 1% don't know. So there's 2% of men out there who are just too stupid to figure out a simple answer to a basic question. For women, 78% of women support, 19% oppose, and they have 2% who say it depends, and 1% are too stupid to know what's going on and don't know. The age groups don't matter in this. It is overwhelming, as just as overwhelming as it is when it comes to gender, at 82 and 78% in support of voter ID. From 18 to 34, 78% of voters support photo ID for voting. From 35 to 54, 82% support. And 55 and older, 79%. Right there in line, same numbers basically. Now, if they have children at home or no children at home, younger parents, what, it doesn't matter. 82% if they have children at home, 79% if they don't have children at home. Now, this is where it gets interesting. The race question. If you are white, non-Hispanic, in this survey, 77% support a photo ID in order to vote. 77%. If you are Hispanic, black, Asian, or other, 84% support photo ID. 84 to 77. It's 5% different. That's actually more than 5% different. That's 8%, 7% different. 21% oppose if you're white. That's your white suburbanite MSNBC CNN viewer goes, this is racist. This is racist. Voter ID is racist. Whereas Hispanic, black, and Asian, only 13% oppose. Isn't that interesting? Have you heard it framed that way? Will you hear it framed that way? No, you will not hear it framed that way. No, you have not heard it framed that way. In fact, every survey that has been done on the issue of photo ID for voting shows overwhelmingly that even more so than evil whitey, because the white suburban female vote, liberal, oh, you know, we got to I feel bad. Those are the people with the white savior complex who think, there's no way a black person could get a photo ID. They just don't know what to... I'm more woke than... I have to look out for them. It's part of my duty. Apparently don't have any meaning in their lives. They search for it externally. They are the ones who have the problem with a photo ID. The people who allegedly can't get a photo ID because it's just too complicated a process have no problem with it because they recognize the racist trope of black people can't get a photo ID, and they're not going to play that game. You got to love it. You got to love it. Now, it's kind of funny. CNN has a story along the voting lines. Georgia removes 100,000 names from voter registration rolls. I mean, oh, my God. 100,000. What are they doing? Are they disenfranchising more and more black and brown people? Those horrible race. No, every state does this. Every state doesn't do it enough. Every state needs to do it more. People who are inactive, people who have died, you need to compare the list of the voter rolls to the death rolls and go, all right, people are dead, need to be off the voting rolls. People move. The voter rolls need to be updated. Even if you moved five times within the same state, registered to vote at each new address, the old ones should be taken off, but they're often not. That leaves open opportunities for fraud. But because of Stacey Abrams, every state does that. Literally every state does that. But under the banner on CNN.com, voting rights under attack. Georgia removes 100,000 names from voter registration rolls. They don't tell you that this is a normal part of business and every state does and should do this. They don't because they want to cause strife. They want to cause division. They want to scare black people. They're pathetic. They deserve every bad thing that happens to them. And I mean that in the nicest way possible. Now we got to get to the Sheldon Whitehouse story. This is amazing. It's rabidly hypocritical. It's downright racist. It is one. I'm looking at, and I decided to just look. Like, okay, well, how many, if you just search Sheldon Whitehouse, and then you click on the news tab. What comes up? As you would think, a member of Congress, a member of the United States Senate, a Democrat in good standing, who is a member of a beach club, country club, I don't know, private club, that is a member of an all-white, as a matter of policy, not just that suddenly all the black people resigned, an all-white beach club, you'd think that would rate as news. I remember probably 10 years ago, Republicans had the Democrats and the Republicans in the House every year or every 2 years, whenever it is, they have a retreat. They do this retreat where they go somewhere. A lot of times they come to Baltimore or they go someplace in Virginia. It's not, you know, it's not like a corporate retreat or a climate change retreat where they find a way to get them to Bora Bora or something. But 1 year, the Republicans were down in Virginia. The Democrats were in Maryland. And the Republicans were at a place where one of the meetings, because they have meeting rooms, you know, if you've ever been inside a big hotel, you notice that, or at a wedding at a hotel or an event at a hotel, all the rooms have different names. The Republicans were at a resort where some of the rooms were named after people who had owned slaves. Now, this was more than 100 years ago, and they're in a hotel for a conference. Who goes through and like their little phone and they go, all right, well, let's go to the next room. All right, we got to enter this guy's name. What is his name here? Where does this possibly come from? And we have to, but there were stories written about how Republicans had attended a conference. And they're so insensitive on the issue of race that they attended a conference. They held a conference at a hotel that has rooms, conference rooms, meeting rooms, named after slave owners. Can you believe it? It is a true outrage. How this republic survived such an injustice is something for the ages. Well, with that being the standard set by lefties, one would think that a member of the United States Senate, being a member of a club, that is restrictive. meaning whites only, would be news. It's not a meeting room. It's not a plaque next to a urinal in a bathroom down the hall that nobody ever uses anyway, and we forgot it was there. It's not even the situation with, what's his name? Rick Perry. Remember Rick Perry? When he ran for president, and they said, oh my goodness, there was a rock at a ranch that Rick Perry's family used to vacation at when he was a kid. And on that rock was painted the N-word. Now, the rock was overturned. It had been discarded. But it was there. And therefore, it was a problem. And Rick Perry had to answer for it. Sheldon Whitehouse has not really had to answer for this, because every day he is in the United States Capitol when the Congress is in session. And he's not being badgered by this. He appears on CNN and MSNBC regularly and has not been badgered by this. These stories date back more than a decade about Sheldon Whitehouse's membership in this restricted club. But this is probably the first you're hearing about it. Washington Post, Sheldon White, or not Washington, New York Post. Sheldon Whitehouse under fire for membership at all-white beach club. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse is facing new scrutiny over his decades-long membership in an all-white private beach club as he bills himself as a progressive and prominent critic of systemic racism, dismissing membership based on race as, quote, a long tradition in Rhode Island. It's a long tradition. Whitehouse, Democrat, Rhode Island, was confronted Friday by a Go Local Providence reporter who published the video along with an article Saturday detailing what occurred after asking these senators about the senators' membership at the Newport-based Bailey's Beach Club. Sounds like a really bad movie. Part of the Sprouting Rock Beach Association. Now, let's listen to that confrontation, if you can call it a confrontation, between Senator Whitehouse and this woman who, in the 1 minute, 6 second video or whatever it was, has done more journalism in regards to Sheldon Whitehouse in these two clips than anybody in Washington, D.C. has done in the last 10 years.
Okay, back in 2017, you had expressed concerns about the membership of the all-white Bailey's Beach Club, said that you hoped it would become more diverse. Now, your family's been members, your wife is one of the largest shareholders. Has there been any traction in that? Are there any minority members of the club now?
I think the people who are running the place are still working on that, and I'm sorry it hasn't happened yet.
Alright, look, I don't know, man. The people who run the place, they're still working on that. Really? Really? 4 years? 4 years and nothing. You couldn't find a single black person to join. And you're cool with that, right? You're totally cool with that on top of that. Well, what is he going to do? Go engage in massive stereotypes? You know that's what he's thinking. Look, black people don't like to swim. What are you going to do? That's what's going through his white head. His wife is wealthy. She is on the board of this place. So if anybody has the ability... She's one of the most connected, and the way they describe her is shareholders. She's one of the biggest shareholders of this club. If anybody is in a position to make changes at this place, it's him. It's his wife. Yet, you're not going to see that. You're not going to hear that. The confrontation, again, it's not really a confrontation, but the inquisition continues.
Do you have concerns in 2021? I mean, obviously, it's been 4 years. You had remarks on the floor following the deaths of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd saying, you know, hoping to root out systemic racism in the country. Your thoughts on an elite, all-white, wealthy club, again, in this day and age. Should these clubs continue to exist?
It's a long tradition in Rhode Island, and there are many of them. I think we just need to work our way through the issues. Thank you.
Look, it's a long tradition of discrimination based on skin color. I mean, what do you want from me? I can't possibly fight Rhode Island tradition. Rhode Island, man. Now, you would think this would rate. You'd think this would be a national story. Yet a search through Google turns up quite a few results about Sheldon Whitehouse because he's a sitting United States senator. But in regards to this, it turns up the New York Post, the Go Local Providence, Fox News, of course, the UK Daily Mail, the Washington Examiner, National Review, and that's it. That's it. Those are the news results. I actually know that there is a story about this at the Washington Free Beacon as well, but they apparently don't count as news, according to Google. That's it. That's the only... Now, this confrontation, this video, happened on Friday. That's plenty of time for anybody to have written it up. You don't even have to really put too much of a spin on it. You don't have to do a TV package at CNN.com. You can just, all right, here's the story. But no, not interested. And there's a lot more to this story. Back to the New York Post. While Whitehouse appeared to dismiss the club's circumstances, his wife, Sandra Whitehouse, is one of the three largest shareholders in the club. Again, I told you that. She could make the difference if he actually wanted to integrate this club. When the Rhode Island senator, who was first elected in 2006, initially ran for his office, he disavowed his membership and pledged to quit the club, Go Local reported. Yes, I will not stand for this injustice. I will quit this club. Is anybody looking? All right, nobody's looking quick. Let's run into the club. Let's have a party. Make sure, quick, sweep the place for off-white people. Make sure there's nobody here who isn't dressed as staff, who's not white, and then let's go back inside the club. Go Local pressed Whitehouse and his office over his membership multiple times in 2017, noting that more than a decade had passed since his unkept campaign promise. After the lawmaker repeatedly declined requests for comment on his involvement in the club, a Go Local reporter confronted Whitehouse at a Newport-based event last year. Quote, I don't think it would be nice if they changed. I think it would be nice if they changed a little bit, but that's not my position, the left-wing senator told the outlet. Again, hey, there's this massive injustice. Are you going to do anything about it? Because you're kind of in a position to do something about it. You're going to do anything? No, I won't do anything about it. But somebody should do something about it. And I'll tell you that I will take the brave stand and say that somebody should do something about the thing that I am in probably the most advantageous position to do anything about. Somebody should absolutely do it. Now, I've got to go. I see a minority coming down the street, and I don't like to be that close to them. I shall be getting back into my restricted club. It's a game I don't like to play, but more often than not, it's necessary to be played. And it is, what if a Republican had done this? What if a Republican have done this? I remember stories. I can't remember who they were because they're so insignificant, these members, but Republicans being tarred because there weren't enough minority members in whatever golf clubs they were members of. Not that they were members of a restricted golf club. Now, do you remember Trent Lott? He was United States Senate Majority Leader back 96, 98, something like that. It was in the midnight. He took over in 94. But in like 96 or 98, Strom Thurmond had a 100th birthday, some milestone, some old, very old. And so everybody is roasting him and saying, oh, I have good things about Strom. He's old, very old, not long for this world. What are you supposed to do? Strom Thurmond, when he was a younger man, was a horrible racist, okay? But we in this country believe in redemption when redemption is sought for and asked, and we give it. And so that had long been since been put to bed. And so in toasting Strom Thurmond for his either 99th or 100th birthday, he said, oh, man, you ran for president back in the day. It would have been a real different country if you'd won the presidency. A lot better, because the guy's old and he's dying and he didn't live very much longer. And you just say those kind of things on somebody's birthday.
But because Trent Lott didn't say, remember when you ran for president back in the 50s or 60s or whatever it was, and you were a flaming racist? For that, I have decided to take this bat out and beat you about the head and neck with it until your lifeless body slumps over onto the floor. Because Trent Lott didn't do that, because he chose to do what a normal human being would do in that situation, he was tarred and feathered as a racist by the media and badgered to the point that he had to resign his post as Senate Majority Leader in the United States Senate. He had to leave, and then he left the Senate because he said nice things about a guy with a bad past on his birthday. Sheldon Whitehouse is a member of a racist club that does not allow black people to join. And he gets questioned every 5 years or so when somebody from this golocal.com or whatever, Go Local Province website, manages to cobble together the budget to get within the same area he is to ask him a question. Meanwhile, multi-billion dollar news corporations can't be bothered with this story. It was funny because some of them actually tweeted it out. Oh, kudos on so-and-so for doing this. The guy, one of the guys from Axios tweeted it out. Oh, kudos for them for going to do it. Dude, you are with these people more often than their family. Why don't you ask these questions? And more importantly, how many more questions like this are there to be asked of other people, other members of Congress of either party that are out there with this kind of baggage around their necks and this sort of history with them? What are you waiting for? What are you hiding? Is it, well, you're all, look, Senator Whitehouse, he's a good guy. Yeah, he doesn't like to swim with the blacks. What are you going to do? But, you know, still, he's good for a quote. And during the Trump administration, he really was rabidly partisan and willing to say just the most outrageous things that later turned out to be factually inaccurate, but still made for really good copy and good sound bites. So the fact that he's a member of a racist club, it's not cool, but it's not bad. It's at least he's not Donald Trump. Is that the rule of thumb? Is that the way this works nowadays? Because if they're hiding this from you, if they're not telling you this, what else aren't they telling you? What else are they hiding from you? Let that sink in. Terrifying thought. As we run out of time, a story I told you about, I don't know, a week and a half ago, now coming back. And people, the rest of the world is finally catching up. You're welcome. You're welcome, Mr. and Mrs. America, for me keeping you so far ahead of the curve. Fox News has the story. Former President Obama's chief ethics agent, the ethics guy, ripped into President Biden's son Hunter for his selling of his art at prices ranging up to $500,000 to anonymous buyers. I told you that. It was obvious that that was a money laundering scam. And I told you they would keep, before it was even known, I told you they would keep the buyers private. Because that's standard usually in the art world. If you're buying a Picasso, you don't want the world to know you have a Picasso hanging on the walls in your mansion. Okay, but a Hunter Biden meth fever dream is hardly a Picasso, but somehow it's worth $500,000. Right. Quote, the notion of the president's son capitalizing on that relationship, that's Walter Schaub, the former Office of Government Ethics Director under Obama, said that it feels shameful and grifty. Said, quote, the notion that the president's son capitalizing on that relationship by selling art at obviously inflated prices and keeping the public in the dark about who's funneling the money to him has a shameful and grifty feel to it, Schaub told Fox News on Monday. Well, welcome to the party, pal. Stevie Wonder could have seen this coming. Will Joe Biden be asked about it? Probably not. Probably not. Before the show, he's going to get... getting 20%. What is it? Wasn't it 20% for the big guy? Schaub also warned that the anonymity granted to Hunter's clients could allow, quote, influence seekers to funnel money to the Biden family. Yes, it's exactly what I told you. He knows who's buying it. He's got the check. There's a little bit of a talk. And if you spent $500,000 on some acrylic masterpiece of Hunter Biden's,
wouldn't you, and you did it because you wanted to have influence over him, wouldn't you say, hey, dude, I, remember that blue one that looked like vomit, like projectile vomit splatting against the wall? I bought that one. Yeah, $500,000 right from me. Hey, I've been meaning to catch up with you about this contract that the company is trying. You know, that's how this stuff works. That's how this stuff works. That's why this is so nefarious. So, now, this is, remember the Trump years? All the left did was try to save the Trump Hotel. That's nothing but a grift for the Trump family. Nothing but a grift for the Trump family. You know that when the so-and-so from such-and-such country comes to the United States for a week, they stay in the Trump Hotel. Oh, really? Really? So they're putting up, you know, what, $500 a night for a hotel. And so there's $2,500. You think that $2,500 is going to be enough to buy a billionaire? Well, I didn't say that. It's the appearance of impropriety. Okay, $2,500 bothers you. It's the appearance of impropriety. $500,000 for some muslin stretched over some wood and about $12 worth of paint, oil, acrylic, whatever it is. That doesn't bother you. That's not worth reporting. But somebody staying in a hotel for a week, beyond the pale, outrageous. How dare they? Influence peddling. Lawsuits filed left and right by attorneys generals across the country, including here in Maryland, going, well, emoluments clause. Emoluments clause. Emoluments clause. Well, what about the idiot crack addict son of the president of the United States selling $500,000 worth of quote-unquote art to who? We don't know. From what country? Where? Emoluments clause. He talks to his father every day. Stinks to high heaven. At least it's getting some play. Of course, it's only on Fox. Sooner or later, maybe the rest of the media will catch up with this program. As time has, we are out of time, ladies and gentlemen. And everything in between. Yes, we are. But you know what? This allows you to go off and celebrate my birthday. So I bid you adieu for today. We will be back tomorrow. Don't forget about the Curse program at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. You can email me, DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com. That's also the PayPal account for those of you who, if you want me to email you the Curse program because you want nothing to do with Patreon, I'll do that. Did that a couple times. Anyway, thank you guys for the warm birthday wishes, all of that good stuff. I got to keep walking through these blisters so I have many more birthdays. I will speak to you tomorrow. Have a great one.
Your thoughts on an elite, all-white, wealthy club, again, in this day and age. You know, should these clubs continue to exist?
It's a long tradition in Rhode Island, and there are many of them.